Yo, what's the deal, baby? This your boy, Uncle Luke, formerly of the 2 Live Crew. You are listening to Pass It Down with Mike Silver and Natalie Silver. Natalie is the most beautiful young lady in this deal right here. Mike doesn't look so good, even though they're dad and daughter. It's the big show, baby.
Okay, so where we left off with Amy Trask in part one of our conversation with her, we had hit on some pretty awesome stuff. Her time with the Raiders, Al Davis, all sorts of great stories, but there was a lot still left. And so now we can get into some other things, Natalie, like, I don't know, Ice Cube.
Ice cream.
Marijuana.
And in shocking news, more Steve Kerr, because we haven't talked about him enough.
And none of those things are necessarily related. I just want to note.
So let's pick back up with a story that you tell that I'd actually never heard before.
The time I got the most mad at Amy, although I didn't tell her I was mad for a long time. But so in 2008, Natalie, I covered a game in Green Bay, rode all night. And the next morning, candidate Barack Obama was speaking at the Resch Center right there by Lambeau Field while campaigning. And, you know, we're all Californians, so we don't get candidates coming, you know, to our towns in the general election ever. We get ignored. And I was like, this is awesome. So after writing all night, I went with a couple of other journalists who covered the Packers and watched, you know, candidate Obama speak. And it was super cool. And then all I had to do, really, I had a little bit of time to decompress and then head to that little Green Bay airport. And all of a sudden, I get this frantic call from Nancy Gay, another journalist that you heard her mention in the Ann Killian podcast, which we also have to ask Amy about since we met. And Nancy's like, hey, I just want you to know that John Herrera, the Raiders, just called you a pot smoker. You got to get off. Like, what? So basically, at a press conference, things were going really bad with the coach at the time of the Raiders, young coach Lane Kiffin, and Al. And it was toward the end, I believe, if my timing's right, of the Lane Kiffin era and the infamous overhead projector press conference and the 76-yard field goal attempt that I happened to see and all that. What had happened was John Herrera was a Raider employee who was mad at another writer named Tim Kawakami, who at the time I had a terrible relationship with. Okay. We're good now, but at the time we were not close at all. And he was yelling at Tim Kawakami and he was mad at him. And he said, you know, you're a liar. You're all liars. You're smoking pot, smoking buddy, Mike Silver. Now, okay, so
wrong with that?
I had a few reactions. My first reaction was, at the time, my line was, the defamatory part of that statement was buddy.
Buddy, that your buddy is.
Yeah, because I really didn't like Tim, which, you know, I would laugh about with Tim now. But I was like, buddy. And, you know, right, there's nothing wrong with it. But as I later told Amy, I'm like, you were my oldest. You were like in junior high. And I'm like, I don't really want to be like the publicly.
Wait, can I ask how he got that image of you in his head?
I have no
Okay, let me just say, you ask spectacular questions. What a phenomenal question. Yes, Mike, how did he get that image
Amy, do you know? Because I never knew. Like, I'm like,
I never knew. Maybe it was just like blazing out in front of that hotel. Maybe it was.
I mean, there was so much more you could have on me, like drunk,
right?
Humiliating myself. Yeah, it's. I mean, I went to Cal in the 80s. Like, it's not whatever. But it was. What's weird is that. What was weird to me was that he associated me with Tim because I literally I did not have a relationship with Tim at all. So I was like, huh? And also I wasn't there. And then here's the weird thing. Maybe this is funny because a few years later, so he was still with the team in Napa during training camp, but not when I was covering a training camp day. Lucinda Williams, I think, was playing at that Uptown Theater, which is that really cool venue in downtown.
Probably lots of smoking Napa. Pot, smoking buddies over there.
So mom and I got a babysitter and went to the show. Okay. And, you know, I was in a good state. I was like, this is cool. This will be fun. And John Herrera's there. Like I go to the bar to get a beer and I see John Herrera like in the distance. And I was like, okay, this is a lot, man. I like,
well, and so Natalie, so you know, this whole sort of from my perspective, how this unfolded, first of all, to be a little mushy for a moment, sitting here, listening to you, ask the questions you're asking. And by the way, not just right now listening to you, but watching your career and your trajectory and all you're doing, it makes me mushy gushy. I remember when you were born. Mm. So to see the woman you have become is overwhelming. And I share that with you right now because there's a segue. I was in meetings the day this whole Kawakami Herrera incident occurred. I knew nothing about it. I was in business meetings. I knew nothing about their contretemps, this whole conflagration. That night, I'm at home. I don't know. It's like 9 at night, 10. I got home very, very, very late from these meetings. And I start getting all these emails and phone calls about what went on between Tim and John. Well, then when I heard about the pot smoking, smoke pot, smoke pot, and I'm saying it that way because I think that's kind of how it came out, it never occurred to me, Mike, that that would bother you. Because
there.
Look, you went to Berkeley. I mean, right. You know, everybody stereotypes people that went to Berkeley. I think half the country, maybe more, thinks that everybody who went to Berkeley did that. So, you know, there's lots of things that I think could be said that I would think, wow, that's going to annoy Mike. Wow, Mike's not going to like that. But when I heard smoke pot, pot smoking, whatever it was, never, ever, ever, ever dawned on me that that would in any way get under your skin. So then when you shared with me quite a bit of time later that what bothered you about it was the impression it might leave with Natalie, I understood. It was a light bulb going off moment. I was like, now I get it. I never understood why it was that it bothered you the way it did. Because again, everybody thinks everybody at Cal is like that. But when you shared with me, I don't know whether it was a few weeks later, a couple weeks later, whatever it was, that it was because you immediately thought of Natalie. I was like, oh, now I get it.
And then when did you finally let me see the truth?
Well, I would like to fast forward then, because you'll both remember this story, to the party I hosted at Henry's before Super Bowl 50. So this was 5 years ago. Natalie was a student at Cal, and I wanted to... I wanted to throw a party, you know, for the Cal people across the bay, but I also wanted to make it kind of, you know, include them in Super Bowl week. So I decided I was going to host a panel, and I assembled this incredible all-star panel. Oh, so the panel was Amy, DeQuell Jackson, who was at the time played for the Colts and was in fact the guy who intercepted the pass that led to the deflated ball scandal just happened. Scott Fujita, who played for many years in the NFL.
Smoking pot.
Yeah, and was a Cal guy. And then Jared Goff, who at the time was, you know, about to enter the draft. So still
and
was
a student at Cal.
Student at Cal. One little glitch was that before we did like a pre thing with Hannah Storm and Jared Goff's parents and a couple people. And I remember at the Bears Lair, and I remember telling Jeff Darlington, my friend and, you know, fellow journalist, like, hey, listen, man, I got to host this panel. So make sure that I only, you know, I slow sip this beer and I don't get too buzzed. What I neglected to say to Jeff Darlington was, and also don't get hammered yourself, but he he did, and he was so and Kate Scott was there. It was just this, we were trying to do this panel thing, so somehow Jeff Darlington on the microphone with all these people at Henry's watching just goes, all right, we're gonna get this MF-er started with Mike Silver's daughter, and hands Natalie the microphone.
I have no prep.
And you were 19.
Technically, I was 21 and living in North Carolina.
Yeah, you were, quote, 21.
But I was 19.
So, and Amy, so you understand, like, Natalie was very aggressive and assertive on the playing field, you know, in soccer and field hockey. She was a really, you know, good player who was a leader. So I knew she had that in her, but she was pretty shy, and especially in those contexts, like around adults. And, you know, I didn't think of her as someone who publicly would be able to like handle that situation. So my heart kind of sank when Jeff did that. And I'm thinking, oh man, what's going to happen here? Well, what happened was Natalie says, all right, well, I think the first question everybody here has on their mind is, what's the deal with the NFL and marijuana?
Okay, I have four comments about this. Number one, Natalie, you own that room. So, but for your father having told me and told us just now about your hesitancy to do such things, never would have known. I do remember you asking that question. I thought it was phenomenal at the time. Number three, I was not invited to that pre-party at the Bears Lair. I'm just going to put that right out there now. My feelings just maybe a little hard.
It was very small.
Number four, what I remember about that evening, because I was sitting on the panel, I was thrilled, honored, delighted to participate. And I was seated with Jared Goff to my left. And at one point, when it was opened up for question and answers, someone said to Jared, and it was either phrased in the positive, which is, are there any teams in particular you do want to go to as opposed to others? Or it was phrased in the negative. I think it was phrased in the negative, which is, are there any teams you don't want to go to? And I immediately got so protective and leaned over and like put my hand gently on him and leaned into him and said, don't answer this. He said to me, thank you very much, but kind of looking at me like, yeah, I knew that. but immediately my instincts came out to protect Jared and just say, do not answer this. Nothing good will come of it. Oh, and my last point, the lawyer in me is so proud of you for thinking to just correct your dad mid-podcast to say you were 21. Well done, Natalie. Very well done.
What's amazing, though, is that I think Jared was already shell-shocked. So Natalie asked this question. The room's kind of frozen. There's people I know.
I know. I don't know what I was expecting, but it was kind of...
There's also some randos. So Amy, who, as she said, is not tall, but has a massive presence, grabs the microphone before I know what's happening and says, let's be honest. Do you want these guys taking Vicodin or Toradol or smoking a little weed? And then gives a super eloquent and smart answer about how we need to look at this now. You know, and this is before it was legal, but it was medically legal. And Amy kind of gives a surprisingly pro investigate the merits of marijuana answer.
Well, and, you know, it just, it's always stumped me that people who would be comfortable knowing that players are being injected with all sorts of drugs or taking all sorts of drugs, whether by injection or otherwise after games, would say, I don't want you using medically prescribed marijuana. What is the difference in someone's mind between a doctor prescribing Toradol or a doctor prescribing something incredibly strong, perhaps addictive, perhaps not, and a doctor prescribing medically prescribed marijuana? And I would always say to people who argued with me, if you had a loved one who was in severe circumstances and pain and was being prescribed a narcotic, something addictive, an NSAID, some really, really strong drug, or that person could be prescribed medical marijuana, and if it was a circumstance where that could help, wouldn't you prefer the latter? And sometimes when I contextualized it that way, I got a different response. But I do remember grabbing that microphone.
I also can't imagine that it would help anyone's performance necessarily. Like,
I mean, like
if you're smoking,
maybe a rapper. Like, I don't know.
No, an athletic performance. I can't imagine that it would actually.
Yeah,
it's a great point. Especially if you're smoking. Great point.
I mean,
you wouldn't know, but
yeah, I'm told. But so what's incredible is Amy does that, and then Scott Fujita, and she and Scott are like the two in the middle, and Jared and DeQuell are on the outside. Scott Fujita then grabs the mic and goes, you know, I was a junior at Cal, and right out there, and points out the window, I was loading up a bowl. And as this is happening, Goff and DeQuell, who's still in the league, are like moving their chairs as far outside as possible. You know, Jeff Darlington is stumbling around. He told me the next morning, because our big boss at the time was at the party, and he said, I'm either fired or promoted, but like, you know, honestly, that was not something.
What I remember most about that party is that all of my friends, you know, I of course like bring everyone for clout and social capital. And goodness, all of my friends are like, oh my God, like we have to go get a picture with Goff with Jared. And I was like, so mortified. I was like, no, I cannot do that. And it was like a big thing the whole night. Everyone was like, come on, like, let's go get a picture. And I was just like, please, please get me out of here.
There is a picture of you and Kiko Alonso, though, I will say that. And Zach Ertz, I believe.
Well, so, you know, that's where I drew the line.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, a Stanford guy. I'm curious, Amy, like, did you know that Amy likes ice cream so much that she eats it in the morning?
I did not know that.
Like,
I come by this through the way I was brought up. You know, my mom, we had a separate freezer in our house just for ice cream. It was the ice cream freezer. And we just thought that was normal. Everybody in my family thought, well, everybody has one freezer just for ice cream because we had what we called the ice cream flavor. And there was never a day in my life living at home, you know, from the time I was can remember all the way till I moved out, that there weren't at least 15 half gallons of different flavors. And I was the kid who, you know, if you went to a friend's house and the mom said, you want some ice cream? They would bring out one or two little pints or a half gallon of ice cream. We had at my house, the ice cream tray. This is like, you're getting big insights into my childhood. It was the ice cream tray. My mom's even shorter than I am. And she would come into the room and she'd say to my friends, do you guys want some ice cream? And she'd walk in with the ice cream tray. And there were a minimum of 12 half gallons of different flavors with toppings and things like that. So this is not new in my family. I'm just carrying on a tradition.
So no one's obese. No one's fat.
Look, you know, I'm not going to say some of us don't have a few extra pounds here or there, but no obesity.
I will just also say
that, you know, ice cream has calcium. Calcium's good for us.
I want to grow up in that family. I want a time machine. That's unbelievable.
I lived in a big co-op and in Cala Northside with like 130 people living in the house. And so we bought all of our food in bulk and they would just buy, the food manager would just buy like the gallon or probably more than gallon, like the ones that you see when you go into an ice cream shop, tons of Häagen-Dazs, Ben & Jerry's, everything like in our freezer. So we had a similar situation, but that was scary because you could just like,
yeah, that's amazing.
But you had to share it with 130 people. I just had to share it with my, you know, my family.
You know, we just got an extra freezer, which, you know, I think it's been a huge point of controversy in the household. It was like, do we need an extra freezer?
Well, like my wife grew up in a place where they like would kill their pets and then put all the meat in the freezer for, you know, the
they
winter.
Didn't, they, it was humanely slaughtered, but.
You're kind of scaring me.
I mean, how do you think I get kept in line?
Okay, wait, I've got to ask Amy this because this has been like a huge thing in our family and our little social sphere. I'm going to ask you to rate the following five mediocre desserts: kettle corn, shortbread, Nilla wafers, ginger snaps, or
graham crackers. All terrible.
Yeah, those aren't desserts.
Yeah,
rate them? They're not desserts. I will say about graham crackers, though, they are the obvious necessary ingredient for s'mores, and s'mores is a dessert. Okay. So graham crackers, you need to put the melted marshmallows and the chocolate on. So that's graham crackers. I don't think kettle corn is a dessert. It's corn.
Disgusting.
I don't think it's disgusting. I just don't consider it a dessert. Vanilla wafers, I mean, unless you bury them at the bottom and use them as a foundation for an ice cream sundae, I don't see the point. Those aren't, you know, there's a great objection in the law where if someone says something, opposing counsel can say, objection assumes facts not in evidence. And so when you ask me to rate those as desserts, the first thing that comes to mind is objection assumes a fact not in evidence. They're not desserts.
I'll sustain it, but with one stipulation.
Yeah.
The reason that we fight about this so much is that, what do I call shortbread, Natalie?
Sweet chalk.
Sweet chalk. I believe that shortbread is a fiasco. Like, I get that, like, the first bite of it could taste okay, but the only way I would ever consent to eat it is if, you know, like when you go to the dentist and they have that tube that constantly just puts water into your mouth at all times. Like, if I had one of those and could hydrate properly as I like ingested a couple bites, I would consider it.
Well, what if you use the shortbread as a base for an ice cream sundae and added whipped cream and toppings, and that would sort of permeate the shortbread and make it a little more moisture?
I would eat the entire ice cream and sundae part around the shortbread.
No, that's bullshit. You would eat the entire thing.
If I had to, but if I had my choice, I would just toss it out.
Okay,
but
well, now we have our opinion. We can add it to like our database.
Yeah, and also, yeah, we should have done the whole bread rankings.
Come back on another episode and we'll make you do bread rankings.
Yeah, for sure.
Deal.
Cheat sheet, sliced wheat sucks. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so I want to hear a little bit about what you're doing now, especially the big three. And you are running that with, am I correct?
Fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am not running it, but thank you for that. I am the chairman of the board, and it is just a thrill and an honor to be part of the big three. As you guys noted, Ice Cube and his business partner, long time, like decades, partner Jeff Quantinitz formed the big three a few years ago. And I am the chairman of the board. Clyde Drexler is our commissioner. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember Phi Slamma Jamma. I bet you remember that, Mike. And we've just got magnificent, magnificent coaches and players. And the wind was at our back. We were a startup entity for a few years. After our last season that we played, we not only had the wind at our back, it was gale force wind in terms of media contracts and sponsorship contracts and men just wanting to opt in. And, then the pandemic. So we made the appropriate and wise decision to not have a season because we could not in any way do so and jeopardize our players and our coaches, many of whom are older and in a group of people that would have been in even more risk than others. So we are looking forward to getting back when we're able to do so. I mean, we got guys like Oakley and Gervin, and it's a phenomenal concept, a phenomenal league. And I will share with you both, but I'm thinking of you, Natalie, and all you're accomplishing and all you have before you that's yet to be accomplished. We are the first of the big sports leagues to have female head coaches. And nice. The year that Clyde Drexler had been a coach our first year, and then we wanted to make him commissioner, which he agreed to do, and we needed to replace him as a coach. And I was sitting in a room with Cube and Jeff and Clyde, and I said, how about Nancy Lieberman? And not one of them raised an eyebrow, so to speak. Not one of them raised gender as an obstacle. And we hired Nancy Lieberman as a head coach. And her first year, she won the championship of the entire Big Three and was voted by other coaches and players as coach of the year. And the next year, when we expanded, we added Lisa Leslie as a head coach. And Lisa Leslie, in her first year, won the championship and was voted coach of the year by all the other coaches and players. And my point being that not one person who's a part of the big three, not its founders, Cube and Jeff, not its commissioner, Clyde Drexler, and not one other coach or one player gave a damn about their gender. They just knew those women could coach and they coached their teams to championships their first year.
Damn. So immediately what my brain is going to now is that you've worked with Ice Cube in business and you've also worked with Al Davis. How do those two working relationships compare?
Yet another amazing, amazing question by you, and one I have never been asked. You know, I don't know what you have in mind for your future. I don't know what your dreams are. I believe you will pursue those dreams with a passion, but you might want to consider this whole investigative journalism thing going forward because you are really good at this, or journalism in general, but you might want to hit into investigative journalism. Look, I had the privilege and the pleasure of working for Al and now for Cube and Jeff, men who don't give a damn about race, gender, ethnicity, or any individuality, which, as I said earlier, have no bearing whatsoever on whether one can do a job. You know, I understand my great fortune in that regard. I understand that many people don't have that great fortune. I've now had it with the Raiders and now with the Big Three. And, you know, Cube and Jeff and Al share other similarities as well. These are men who stand up for what they believe and don't succumb to pressure. And it's just, I'm very, very fortunate.
And in addition to Cube being a very, very passionate Raider fan, and I know this because I did that SI story on sports, hip hop, and rock back in 99 that had Cube and Shaq on the cover, even though, but Amy, this is incredible because I interviewed Cube. It was awesome. And he's in the lead of the story. And we had an editor back in New York who wanted to switch and put Allen Houston and Puffy, now Diddy, Natalie, on the cover. And I was like, you cannot. No, and it will not age well. It will be terrible. And I know Allen Houston, he's a really good player for the Knicks, and Puffy. And I was like, I will, you know, like I made every threat I could, and it ended up being Shaq looking like a rapper in Cube in a Laker jersey. And
well,
thank heaven.
And now I will tell you something about Cube, because Natalie, as your dad knows, I have been an NWA fan, right? I became an NWA fan the day NWA burst on the scene in Los Angeles. I have been an NWA fan for as long as NWA existed. As I said, the moment they burst on the scene, and I became a Cube fan at that time. So I have long, long, long been a fan of his musical genius, his artistic genius. I consider him a musical artistic genius. He is every bit as good at business wow. as he is at music. And that's really saying something.
That's incredible. Yeah. In the story, it's him taunting Dale Ellis, then of the Sonics, in the crowd. And Dale Ellis says something back to him. And I think it's like the dumbest thing anyone could ever do. And I said, the most talented lyricist of his generation, a man who once rhymed subpoena with Bosnia Herzegovina. And but what's incredible to me is, like, Natalie, you know, one of my favorite songs is Cave Bitch. And
I do.
In the process of making a point about why he won't sleep with a white woman, and by he, I mean the narrator's voice, because there's artistic license. I'm not saying it's really Cube or not, but the narrator in that song is making the point that he will not, have relations with white women. And he says, white she-devil want to tame me. You're not going to tame me with some bitch named Amy. So somehow he chose the name that you happen to have as the embodiment of the classic white girl name at that time, which is amazing.
I think it's just because it rhymed. I mean, what else are you going to get to rhyme with tame me?
Have you ever broken it down with him?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't.
Yeah, we might suggest that.
Please. Yeah, when you come back on, which will be as soon as we can beg you, we may follow up. So, if it comes up organically while you're hanging out with your business associate, Ice Cube.
Very Larry David to be like, I have a question.
Well, and I do mean it. I mean, the man is a spectacular businessman and just extraordinarily smart. And it's a lot of fun. And hey, you know what, you guys, when we start back up, you got to come be our guests at a game.
That would be unbelievable. And, we will do anything we can to help you support it, because it is a great idea.
Yeah.
And we will put Natalie on the floor with press credentials.
That would be amazing. Yeah. And, I've heard, there's been talk of who might actually play in that league, and,
I'm
sure Kobe would have been, like the all-time which is but what I would like, Amy, is, I did grow up with a guy who went to Pali High and Revere.
You have to mention him every episode.
And he is the all-time leader in three-point shooting percentage. He's a little busy, but he was the first guest on our podcast, along with his daughter, Maddie, another Bear. But I'm wondering if you could sneak Steve Kerr onto a team, at some point.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be amazing.
By the way, speaking of Steve Kerr and basketball and our high school, you know who else went there is Jeannie Buss.
Yes, right. I know she's a little before my time, but she's aged like she's way younger than I am.
And I think you're way younger than I am. So let's just leave that alone.
That's right. Jeannie Buss, who is the owner of the Lakers and current holder of the NBA championship once again.
Okay, there you go.
I think, it has has definitely been cutting edge in all that she's done. Well, Amy, we have like 75 more questions, but we've had you on now for our usual, long amount of time. So
yeah, as Al Davis would say, you've given us enough time.
Yeah, very good.
I love that. Natalie, I'm just going to tell you this. I am beaming with pleasure at having spent this time with you as well as your dad. Your dad and I have a history together, which he's outlined and we've talked about in large part on this. But to see you doing what you're doing, it pops my heart. And I will tell you now publicly what I hope I've conveyed clearly privately, if I can ever do anything to be of assistance to you as you pursue your dreams. And I'll add that I would be delighted and honored to do so. And it's also very, very, very special for me to see the way in which your dad encourages you to pursue your dreams. I know firsthand what it means to have a dad who encourages a daughter to dream and to pursue those dreams, knowing that she can achieve whatever she wants, and you certainly can.
Thank you.
That's amazing. I would say two things. One, be careful what you wish for, that's amazing, Amy. And I'm obviously old because I can't remember what the second thing is, but I know what it is. So Amy and I, Natalie, have had a long running argument that's a source of tension between us, and it is text email based. In other words, Amy couldn't understand for the longest time why I didn't treat email the way that a lot of people now treat texting, which is, oh my God, I got an email, immediately respond to it like it's a text. She had a BlackBerry, she was the queen of email, like instant email, and used it so well. And I, once texting kind of came, I was like, yeah, who emails? Like if you're trying
to still email, yeah.
So I'm wondering, Amy, I think Natalie might have pushed it a little far. Natalie, how often do you check your email?
Well, okay, listen, here's my philosophy on email. If you don't have my number, that means I don't want to talk to you.
Okay. I agree on a personal level, but...
I know.
All right, Natalie, I'm going to go full-on mom mode right now, and I'm going to say to you what I have said to my nieces and nephews who have said the exact same thing that you just did. When people say to me, I'm not interested in email, I'm not interested in email, I just want to text. And then they go on to say, and I want, a career like you had in business. I want to be in business. I want this. I will look at them and I'll say, let me explain something to you. When you go into business, if your company wants to do an IPO, the Securities and Exchange Commission is not going to text you. If you are being audited by the IRS, they're not going to come into the lobby of your business and text you and say, in the lobby,
they're not going to send you a gift.
LOL, or we have a subpoena. LOL. If you want, listen, kids, go ahead and text all you want personally, but don't tell me you're never, ever, ever, ever looking at emails if you want to go into business, because you got to look at emails if you want to go into business. And by the way, when we email on a computer, we don't just have to use our thumbs.
See.
Okay. Now, everything she said is true. And in fact, off the air, we're going to have a longer talk about this. And the other thing, Amy, before I let you go, is I just want to, I think some people have gotten confused about this because this is my long running shtick, but Amy on Twitter is kind of a phenomenon since she joined, and because she's great with GIFs or GIFs, depending on however you put it. And she's very like friendly. Her tag is Aunt Hi, and she makes a lot of comments about, it's so nice that we can have pleasant discourse while disagreeing, and it's civil. And I'm just, real life AV to me is just not that person. So
I don't want you to worry about this anymore, because I want you to know, and we should have a long discussion about civil discourse and how passionate I am about civil discourse at some point. I just want you to know that when I'm out and about and I'm not on Twitter or a computer or television, I still go ham.
Okay. That's the
I do still go ham. I went ham very, very recently. I was out in your old neighborhood, and down here, not up there. And I heard someone say something bigoted horrible, hateful. And I was out in public and I went full on ham on this person, dropping every word imaginable. So don't even worry about a thing, Mike. I still go ham.
I would say I feel bad for that person, but of course I don't, because that person deserved it.
I feel bad for the Twitter followers who maybe, you know, aren't getting a clear perception of
what. Well, if there's ever a reason to go ham, I'm going to go ham. What, you know, I will tell you, in the years I've been on, there's only been maybe two handfuls or less than 10 fingers worth of times someone has said something really nasty to me on Twitter. And I will immediately respond and say, you know what? Fair enough if we disagree, but you don't need to be mean. Of course, I sound like a 5-year-old saying, don't be mean to me. But I'm like, you can disagree with me, but you don't have to do it in a mean manner. Don't be mean, or something to that effect. I think two instances, the response has been, you know what? You're right. I'm sorry. I can disagree without being rude.
I got like a send them to the oven comment, like my second day on Twitter or something. I was like, what is this? You know, like, I miss the days of Sports Illustrated. Sir, your depiction of the Steelers is absolutely false. I abhor the use of pejoratives. You know, like, whoa, I miss those days. And there is one more thing we have to ask you before you go. We had Ann Killian on. It was such a riot. And she told her version of the story of when you yelled at her in the press box because she was, and Ann's very loud, was talking during the national anthem. Do you want to give your...
Well, and she's right. I handled it inappropriately, and I subsequently, many years later, apologized to her. I don't think it was wrong of me to note that the anthem was being played. I was a couple rows behind her, and I didn't intend to yell, but my voice is always, always, always loud. So I'm not suggesting I didn't yell. It absolutely came out like yelling, but that's just me using my voice. But I did it inappropriately. She was a couple rows in front of me. She was watching the end of a game and she was enjoying it and cheering. And the anthem started and I very inappropriately shushed her because the anthem was going on. And what I realized after the fact is I could have walked down the two rows, gently put an arm on her and said, Ann, the anthem has started, and handled it privately. And that's what I should have done. I was wrong for addressing it publicly. I was wrong for chastising her publicly and for doing it as loudly as I did, because I have a loud voice.
She was keyed up before a game. I would say Amy's voice was loud and the anthem over the microphone was probably really loud, but I'll bet Ann was even louder than
both. Well, and the fact is, irrespective of whether anyone agrees with me or disagrees with me that, you know, have asking her to not talk during the anthem was appropriate or inappropriate, my view was, and I later apologized to her, I should have done so privately. I shouldn't have made a scene in the press box. I should have walked down two rows and said, hey, Ann, the anthem's playing. I don't know if you realize that or not. But I did. I apologized because I handled it poorly. And you know what? We all handle things poorly from time to time in life. And saying I'm sorry is a nice thing to do.
Well, I have never really been yelled at by Amy, but I have been yelled at by Ann for sure. And I'm glad that I've at least escaped Amy's
challenge accepted.
You are the best. And we thank you so much for one of the great podcast episodes ever. And can't wait to see you in person when humans congregate once more.
Yes, when life circumstances allow, I can't wait for that either.